Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Hello and welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. It is Thursday, so guess who's here? Jeremy Janine, Urban Milwaukee.
Surprise!
I'm going to start calling him JJ. I feel like calling you
J-squared.
J-squared.
J-squared. What's your best nickname you've ever had?
I was Jar Jar Me for a while after that first Star Wars sequel came out.
Interesting. Right. Jar Jar Me. How long did that stick?
Not long, except for one person.
All right, Jeremy always gives us a nice rundown. I want to start with I-794 because now we're starting to see how this fleshes out and what might happen. Impact on roads around I-794, the Hone Bridge, sort of a startling number when I was reading that story. Did I see if they knock it down, it's a 45% drop in traffic on the bridge?
Yes, so for the first time, we have traffic data, estimated traffic data from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation on what would happen between essentially the Hone Bridge and the Marquette Interchange if it was rebuilt with a what they call a slim down main line or a freeway improvement, or if it was replaced with a boulevard. And yes, their estimate, their best estimate based on a series of different models, is that traffic on the Hone Bridge would drop 45%, which immediately I raised my hackles. I'm like, well, that seems a bit unlikely, but maybe. And so where does that traffic go? So we're talking about 74,000 vehicles a day use that 794 corridor. That's not the Hone Bridge. Hone Bridge is less than that already.
Yeah.
About 22,000, I think, is the number go end to end. So they're like my wife, they get on in Bayview and they drive the whole way to the northwest side. Most of that 74,000 are getting on and off. Logically, if you replace it with a boulevard, you would take a different route. Your route might actually improve going that way, though, similar to what we saw with the Park East, because there'd be, instead of just one or two off-ramps, there'd be lots of different ways to go. But the big takeaway in their model, the Hone Bridge thing is kind of notable, and it feeds into this other thing, where the 150,000 people that are on the high-rise bridge every day, that number would go up by like 7%, but that would be enough to essentially create back-of-the-envelope math, like a 200% in travel times, which seems a bit hard to believe, and then had me asking, well, how did you come up with this number? And as best I understand, they take this big picture look, and then they start diverting to other routes. But what they don't do is, okay, if Steve started taking 43 in the morning instead of the Hone Bridge because he thought it would be shorter, and it didn't turn out to be shorter, they don't model that, oh, you would switch back to the Hone Bridge.
Yeah, here's the other thing, and you're a Bayview guy. There's a couple streets in Bayview that would have significant increase in traffic because of this change, if and when it happens.
Yes, there are two key streets there, Bay and Beecher, which are the same street. It changes names on the opposite side of Kinnickinnick. That street would see something like an 84% traffic increase. Now, we could go down and host the show from one of the lanes on Bay Street right now,
yeah,
and we would not cause a traffic backup. That street is ridiculously overbuilt because right. It predates the freeway.
Yeah,
Kinnickinnick Avenue would see a 30 in this follows through to First Street on the way to downtown because it's a parallel route to the Hone Bridge. That's estimated to see a 30% traffic increase. I think there's reason to think, okay, you'd really have to look at like Lincoln Avenue and Kinnickinnick then, what the impacts would be, because if three cars became four, that would be a notable change.
But here's the other side of that. Businesses, small local businesses, could actually say, hey, I want 30% more traffic driving by my business. They might see my sign. So there's that yin and yang of this thing that it's never as easy as you think. It's just simply knocking something down.
Yes. So wait, the numbers you just listed off, is that for if it becomes a boulevard?
That's if it becomes a boulevard and in the year 2050 and based on some assumption of growth in the region.
Okay, so how much different was it with the other proposed plan, which is just updating 794?
So there is some variation downtown. The one thing I took away from this on both the freeway improvement and the freeway removal options were that the downtown street grid could pretty easily handle all this traffic. There's very minimal, just a couple minute impact, which is about what you would expect. The gridlock seems to occur outside of it. But what happens with that slim down interchange or slim down freeway is there's at least one less on-off ramp pair. And that would cause traffic patterns to change downtown. Mm-hmm. If all of a sudden the Broadway and Milwaukee ramps disappeared, they're only on the lakefront. Well, you're looking at more congestion in certain streets and a lot less congestion on, say, Broadway because there's no ramp there anymore.
I think we said this last time, but just so people don't get panicked, like this is going to happen next week. This is like out of ways.
No, they haven't been. The study's informing the decision. There hasn't even a decision yet.
Yes, the timeline is 2030 at the absolute earliest, which it's almost 26, so it's not that far away, but it's still way out there. No decision has been made. I expect these models to be refined, but lots to discuss here. You can see it all on the state website.
He is Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Lots more to talk about, including, is it historic or just old? Believe it or not, the distinction matters after this. Everybody wants to be
closer to free. All right, less than a week away. You can join me, Steve, Jeff Sherman, for a special night of fun and giving back. It's WTMJ's Trivia Showdown, part of Capco's Kids to Kids Christmas Toy Drive. We are going to be live at Revere's Wells Street Tavern in Delafield on Wednesday, November 12th at 7 p.m. So bring your friends, test your trivia skills, and help bring some spread some holiday cheer, all while supporting a great cause. So bring a new unwrapped toy to donate and make a difference for kids right here in our community. That's the WTMJ Trivia Showdown, Wednesday, November 12th, 7 p.m., Revere's in Delafield. I will beat Steve in trivia. Just wait. Jeremy Janine, are you good at trivia?
I have been known to be good at trivia. I read an article this morning about how no one knows about the assassination of James Garfield because there's a new Netflix short.
Yeah. And you're like, I do.
And I was like, yes. I was like, I do happen to know. I'm not offended.
Well, no, no, no.
And I may or may not be debuting my newest Christmas coat.
You got a new Christmas coat?
Yeah, it's
you were very spiffy in your Christmas coat last year.
Yeah, this one's corduroy.
Are you going to wear it this early in the season?
Oh, I wore it at the one last year.
I know, but we were in December. We were the last ones last year.
Yeah, we're first
ones this time.
What does that tell you? Anyway, you can find Jeremy Janine's great work at UrbanMilwaukee.com. And because they always ask me, where's that tchotchke shop?
Urban Milwaukee, the store, is at the corner of Milwaukee and Mason, 755 North Milwaukee Street, all things Milwaukee and Wisconsin pride.
What are the hours?
10 to 6 every weekday, 10 to 4 on the weekends.
Okay. Would they ever walk in and you'd be like minding the cash register?
Only if someone called in sick, but I might be walking through the store doing all kinds of
things. Because the office is above, right?
We're on the fifth floor.
And it is the holiday season.
It certainly is.
I would imagine there's gifts galore. You made the best gift.
Have you been
right
impacted
now
by tariffs? are the
more
expensive?
We've gone big now.
Yeah, so now that we're talking fiscal policy, we have been impacted by tariffs in multiple ways.
Okay.
Some curious actions by our vendors that I think are profit-seeking. Others are simply like this one product we get from China that an element of a product is obviously went up in price a lot.
Yeah.
But as much as we can, we try and get stuff made locally.
Interesting.
You could do a t-shirt, I love Milwaukee, then F those tariffs underneath it. Right underneath it.
We're a family-friendly store.
Are we supposed to be talking about this? I have no idea.
We are going to be talking about, I love the way you started this article. So, quote, Alderman Robert Bauman is a master of finding leverage,
which he is.
And so I actually kind of appreciate this move because I will be very blunt. I don't want Panther Arena to go away, mostly because I think we have a lot of, like, with the Admirals and stuff. It's a good use of that facility. But I'll let you explain the backstory of this story.
So we can step back quite a bit, but we know across the street from Panther Arena, the Milwaukee Arena, the Mecca, the U.S. Cellular, depending on your point of entry to Milwaukee, is the new Baird Center, and we can go through all the names of that facility, but $450 million new convention center. It took all the focus for the Wisconsin Center District for several years. They're now turning their attention to what do we do with what's now the Miller High Life Theater and the Panther Arena, of course, the former Milwaukee Auditorium, Milwaukee Arena. Both facilities have been updated, the Milwaukee Arena, the Panther Arena, less so than the auditorium. Anyone who's been in Milwaukee a long time knows that the High Life Theater is a lot different than the auditorium that was there before it. But according to a historic preservation staff from the city, the buildings on the exterior and their integrity, and I'm using air quotes there, is largely the same as the day they were built in the early 1900s. So why does that matter? It's because the Wisconsin Center District is doing a highest and best use study, which some people, Alderman Bauman included, expect will recommend that those facilities, one or both of them, be replaced by a convention hotel. Wisconsin Center District owns that land. They've made it clear they'd like a large convention hotel associated with the convention center. They could put it there. There's also other empty lots, but they're really focused on these lots they own. Robert Bauman is the downtown alderman. He's on the board of the Wisconsin Center District, 17-member board. But as we talked about leverage, he knows he'll have more leverage if those structures are designated historic, which would then require a meeting of a commission he chairs. And then if you appeal that, it would go to the city zoning committee, which he also chairs.
Wow.
And then it would go to the common council, which he is only one of 15 members on. His argument is, I don't want to stop these. He made it clear, it's not my intention to stop these. It's my intention to have a public debate on the future of these buildings.
Which I don't always agree with Robert Bauman, but I actually kind of agree with that one.
I think it's hard to argue that point.
Because it's two facilities. I think more so Panther Arena than, because I haven't gone to a show at the Miller the High Life Theater yet.
Oh, I have.
Well, take your daughter to Cocomelon or Bluey or whatever. Right, that's coming.
But, yes, exactly. But I would just say it feels like such a public utility that those buildings get used a lot by the public. That's for them to just unilaterally be like, we're tearing it down to build a hotel for people who don't live here. That should be a public discussion.
If you know, fiscally, what's the easy right answer? If you know.
There's a challenge. There's several different things at play here, and I'll give you the factors. The Milwaukee Auditorium, the High Life Theater, is probably more likely to stay because there's still, I forget the numbers, like $20 million in debt associated with it. The Panther Arena, there's really no master plan for it, and it's just continued to operate as this, at minimum, cash-neutral entity. It has tenants, Milwaukee Admirals, UW-Milwaukee, there used to be Roller Derby. Yeah, the Wave are there. So there's tenants in that building, and it's been standing there 7 years and continues to operate. Is there a better use for that land? Yeah, like a convention center might generate more revenue, but then you're looking at, and the Admirals and UWM have both made this clear, like, we don't know where we would go then, because this is our option.
Because you can't play at you can play hockey at Fiserv.
Yeah, that is correct. There's no ice sheet there. It's the permanent ice sheet there. So the big thing that, why does the Wisconsin Center District want this site versus some other sites? There's vacant sites across 6th Street. There's the state office building that's due to likely come down when they move to 27th in Wisconsin. Across the street from the station here and next to Val Phillips Plaza, there's a vacant site. Why this site? And two sources now have indicated to me, well, the Wisconsin Center District might hope that if they did put a convention hotel there, that they could get a tax exemption of some kind, which you would think would raise the hackles of Greg Marcus, who's on the board, and Mark Flaherty, who owns a series of hotels downtown. But maybe they're partners on this new hotel, so they're not as concerned. So there's lots of moving pieces at play there, but there's real concern from the Admirals and the Panthers about what they would do, and probably the Wave.
I heard somebody talk about this yesterday. It might have been on our station, might have been somewhere else. But there's this dilemma when you talk about hotel rooms. When we have big mega events like RNC or what should have been the DNC or, you know, stuff like that, you need the rooms. All the rest of the time, you don't need the rooms. And all the other hotels who have always been here, they may suffer. Right? Because you don't have that big influx. I don't know how you fix that.
That's always going to be a challenge in a cold weather city and just a very seasonal city.
It's not Miami Beach.
Yeah, I look at the Visit Milwaukee. Visit Milwaukee every week sends out to its members and our stores and members, sends out this detail on this report and everything they're doing. And then one of the things at the end that I always look at is the hotel occupancy. And just by chance, I did look at it yesterday, and it was 64%. So one out of every three hotel rooms in the Milwaukee area was vacant last week.
Is that of the partners, of the Visit Milwaukee members?
That's from an industry service, so I assume it has more than the partners. But I assume almost all the hotels are partners anyways. But yeah, there's a challenge that you don't want hotels to be 100% full, but 60% full is probably less than ideal.
Yeah.
And that number ebbs and flows throughout the year. It obviously goes way higher in the summer.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, where you can find their great reporting on all things Milwaukee. I'll do a couple quickies after the break. Could be up to you. We'll leave it up to you.
Let's do it.
Smorgasbord, grab bag, whatever you want to call it, after this.
This is a good karaoke song. I could put this on my karaoke list. All right, welcome back to Point Taken. We got a couple minutes before the bottom of the hour news with Jeremy Janine, J Squared of Urban Milwaukee. Element.
Element is no more.
No more Element. I can't say I ever went to Element.
It's 618 Live, the Ladybug Club. It's gone now.
Do the Ladybugs get to stay?
The Ladybugs are on the building, so they're not part of the nightclubs.
Nice. Okay, all right.
And there is a court challenge coming here, so it could come back. They've won in court in the past, and that suspension's reduced. But in 13 of the last 20 years, I believe I have that number correct, Element, or its predecessor by different name, Ladybug 618 Live, received some type of discipline from the Common Council, up to a 90-day suspension. Push finally came to shove on Tuesday. The Milwaukee Police Department had previously filed a request to revoke the license, so it wasn't even their annual renewal, which is where a lot of bars get shut down, but a proactive, we're going to pull it, well, I guess it's reactive in many ways, but we're going to yank your license. And the Common Council voted 11-4 to actually do that. Mm. As there has been in the past, there's some concerns. This is a nightclub that caters to a primarily black audience, and bars downtown that are cater to a primarily white audience have not encountered as much scrutiny as the argument put forth by Alderman Mark Chambers and others.
Those being ones that have had as many violent acts associated?
Well, here's the thing. That outside of Element, there was a shooting that left one or two people dead. There was another shooting in a parking garage nearby involving, I forget if it was customers or people that were denied entry into the club. Mm. That there has been many shootings associated with this club that have happened not inside the club, but right next to it by people that can be connected to the club. And so that finally came to the license being yanked. Earlier this summer, there was a spate of Water Street violence, and it was something like 25% of all the incidents that were involved a shooting could be traced back to this club in one form or another.
Do you have a question?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, what is it that they were doing as a club? Because I remember when the, let's take it on the other side. Because I remember when the Brownstone shooting happened, when someone was denied entry, it's right next to Element on Water Street. They proactively changed a bunch of things as far as like how old you had to be to get in, and they were really mourning what happened to the hostess at that bar. So when we come back from the bottom of the hour news, do you know much about like what they were or were not doing as far as not being able to just like end this?
We can talk about it more,
all right,
certainly.
Perfect.
All right.
Take us a break.
Nice segue there. We'll talk about that and more.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. He's Steve. And following up with Jeremy Janine on my question. So Element Lounge is being closed. There's going to be a challenge to it. But as far as the proactive measures any institution, any bar can take to not have violence associated with their customers or people who are going in and out of their club, what are the expectations of what Element could have done to mitigate that?
It's that discussion has never really happened in public to a great extent because it's been so loaded with everything else. But there is clearly, they close the club and then there's just kind of people outside that consistent across all the security camera footage is like, wow, I'm surprised the number of people that are standing around after the bar is closed outside. My mom says nothing good ever happens after midnight. And here's an example of how that plays out poorly.
And Jeff Wagner.
And so in that area, the police have what's called Code Red, which is an acronym for Entertainment District Redeployment or something, where there's extra officers. And so the police end up essentially functioning as bar security because they're in the street trying to get people to leave.
Go to their cars or go home.
Now, there is a parking lot that Element has used around the corner, and that's been the source of some violence, but it's not in the club. So that's been one of the ways they've fought off suspensions in the past is, you know, these were our patrons, but they weren't in the bar. They left at this point. So there is a real challenge there of what is the best.
What's the responsibility?
What's the responsibility? And I think a lot of people would say there's not a big responsibility if it happens once, like this isolated incident. But if it consistently keeps happening, which is what happened at Element, the bar does have do something to control their patrons leaving, and the Common Council clearly had enough of it.
Got it. All right. Well, similar but different. There has been a new director of Community Wellness, that's the name now?
It used to be the Office of Violence Prevention. It's now the Office of Community Wellness and Safety.
So Adam Purcell, sounds like he has new goals that he has announced. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, he made a presentation to the Council's Public Safety and Health Committee, or the Finance and Personnel Committee, so one of the two. And he laid out six things he's going to focus on in the office. So the Office of Violence Prevention, you think I'm just going out there and I'm trying to interrupt violence. A lot of what they do is these violence interrupters go out and try and stop retaliatory violence. They actually have contacts on the street. They know where tensions are high. Then they go there and try and intervene. But he's thinking far beyond that. He wants to look at youth investment, diversion, community violence intervention, crime survivor support, and reintegration. And he made it clear that his focus is really, and this is unusual for what the Office of Violence Prevention has historically been, he wants to be in the youth investment area. And he has a number of metrics he's going to look at there. And you would think he called it a lazy metric to look at shootings. His metrics are early education enrollment, program participation, nutrition and housing access, and reductions in early risk factors, including chronic absenteeism from school. So things you can measure, but not the things you normally think of with crime, but also gets back to the challenge the city has always had with this office, which is, how do you really measure if it's working or not? Murder, homicides go up and down. Are they because of this office? Are they not? That challenge will continue.
Interesting.
I wouldn't just measure by homicides. I mean, you can tell if crime is going down. The numbers are the numbers.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's talking about focusing on the numbers of like that are way earlier in the timeline of someone's life before they get to a point where crime is...
How do you measure impact of what you're doing?
Yes, that's what I've said. Like, that is that office contributing? Yeah. It's very tough to say. He's not laying out metrics for each of those six things, but how will that actually result in anything? Charlene Moore, whose husband, she's an older woman, her husband used to lead that office. She warned him that, you know, you don't have the resources to deliver on a lot of these things. I'd like you to focus on a smaller subset of them.
What was his answer?
That he would take that under consideration.
Okay.
He is Jeremy Jenning, UrbanMilwaukee.com, which we can find their great work. It's pretty easy to sign up for your newsletter, right?
Absolutely. Just go to UrbanMilwaukee.com and we bug you everywhere we possibly can.
Well, that's not really going to sell people on the whole thing, but back off on that part of it a little bit. All right. He's Jeremy, Kristen, Steve. We'll continue our conversation after this on 620 WTMJ.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're right, I did.
You going, I'm going.
You started.
All right. Back with Jeremy Jenning of Urban Milwaukee. And you, see, I watched WSI a couple weeks ago for one of the legislative hearings. And I was very happy that I get to talk about the news that reporters write about versus having to be at these meetings all the time. And then report on them because, God, was it boring. But we just got to do this for, what was it, 7 hours?
Seven? That would have been great. I could have made trick or treat.
How many hours was this budget meeting?
It was just short of 10 hours.
All in one day?
Yeah. I have with a Journal Sentinel reporter, I have a long time thing where the morning of this budget amendment day meeting, which is where everyone brings their idea, and there was 107, that we text each other, bring snacks. Okay. And I went through my lunch, I went through my dinner, and then I was still hungry because the meeting was still going, but 107 amendments, about 50 of them were policy footnotes, so they weren't fiscal items. Somehow they still got discussed at length, even though they all require future action. But the big thing was the first amendment took 2.5 hours because it's a $6 million amendment. I think we discussed it briefly a week or two ago, led by Marina Dmitrievich. That would issue raises to city workers.
She's big on that issue.
Extend library hours to more libraries on Sundays. And then it would provide $900,000 for down payment assistance and legal representation for people facing eviction. And despite the fact that it was clear the council had the votes and the mayor was opposed to it because it would increase the tax levy by about 1%, that okay, let's just vote. The mayor, I'm guessing, will veto it. The discussion went on for 2.5 hours, and I don't know why, but I got to sit through all of it. And then there were still 6.5, 7 more hours to go.
All right. So in 4 or 5 minutes, what did you learn?
The big thing, we talked about the fire truck issue the city had before, where they're not replacing enough their fire trucks. Since we've talked about it, they're actually one of their reserve trucks. So their backup fire truck, while others are getting fixed, was driving actually somewhere near the radio station, near the courthouse, and its wheel snapped off. So it was stuck near 10th and Wells. So that's the backup truck is now. So that meant the city was at, like, that station basically went dark then, unless they could borrow another fire truck from Greenfield or someone else who has a backup fire truck they're not using. And the fire chief has wanted $14 million. The mayor proposed $2 million, not because he doesn't believe $14 million is correct in buying new fire trucks, but because the city has already maxed out what it's borrowing for the year at $116 million. And that's the mayor's subjective decision to not borrow more than that. But Peter Bergelis proposed an amendment. He canceled, essentially, with this, or delayed, a DPW project to replace a building in the Menominee Valley and added $4 million in new borrowing. And it did get support by his colleagues. The big thing tomorrow when the full council votes is, will it get the full support of the council?
Question, how much of the additional 1% raise idea that Dmitrievich had about if you live in the city or whatever it is, how much does that generate, and could that be used for, oh, just a thought, fire trucks?
It could be used for fire trucks. It's a slightly different pool of money in the sense that they borrow for fire trucks, and this is property tax levy. But yes, you could be, okay, we're going to dedicate $400,000 in property tax levy money, which would pay off several million dollars in debt over the course of a decade, to buy more fire trucks. That could happen. Peter Bergelis is still negotiating with the mayor's office. He told me on Tuesday about getting his amendment to buy more $8 million for the fire trucks in addition to the mayor's $2 million over the finish line. Alderman Scott Spiker, something we've talked about a lot, also proposed an amendment to just eliminate the hop, and that failed. It was very clear that his council colleagues have no appetite for that, given the $48 million check they need to write to the federal government. But what did happen is his colleagues clearly endorsed the idea that the Department of Public Works needs to come up with a plan, not actually to do it yet, but just come up with a plan to put fare boxes on the hop.
Funniest moment of the whole 9+ hours. What was that?
Oh, I think I was so delirious by the end. I don't know. I did learn in the hallway from the new parking services manager that vehicle thefts are on the rise for high-end vehicles.
Oh.
So,
well, it makes sense.
The one thing I took away from that is if you're buying a new car, look up the Carfax because the VIN might not be accurate. There was a credit to Mullaly Coggs at one point. She's a member of the committee, Alderwoman Mullaly Coggs. Things were getting out of hand between Marina Dmitrievich, Nick Kovac, and other committee members and administration officials. And she really dialed down the temperature in the room by just saying, hey, we're all allowed to say what we mean, but we don't need to attack each other.
Oh, so Kovac and Dmitrievich still going at it.
Oh, yes.
Toe-to-toe?
Yeah, there was a lot of frustration on both sides.
That's a long-standing spot of friction, having witnessed it many times in the past. All right, we'll wrap it up with Mr. Jeremy Janine, JJ, or J Squared, whatever we're calling him now, on our special local Milwaukee news part of the show we do every Thursday here. If you missed any of it, find it on the podcast. We'll wrap it up after this on 620 WTMJ. All right, Jeremy Janine get out of here from UrbanMilwaukee.com. Technology, talk a little bit about that on the show today with the data centers. Meet snow plowing. Explain.
This is something that when there was a mayoral election in 2021, I have an unpublished article where I came up with a series of ideas that I wanted the next mayor to implement, regardless who it was. And it became less interesting because it became very clear it was Cavalier Johnson real quickly. So the article never got published. But one of them was take what Chicago's doing and allow me to track the snow plows. Mm-hmm. End the criticism of, well, they're not plowing my street. They're just always plowing the main roads or my neighbor's street or whatever. Like, let the data speak and then adjust from it. And there were some other things. I had an idea from Toronto about signs for zoning changes and stuff. But one of these things is actually becoming reality now. Probably. The Department of Public Works budget presentation, if you remember back to August after the floods, they promoted that they were using this new technology in the garbage trucks to identify where all the messes were and better coordinate their responses. They were able to more effectively come get the trash because the trucks were now equipped with technology to report issues. The new thing is those same trucks plow snow. Your garbage truck gets out there in heavy snow. There's also all the city salt trucks that they use. It will have technology that can now track, instead of having inspectors go out and make sure roads are getting plowed, they'll have a map that shows internally that shows when each street was last plowed. It won't show the real-time location. But they're now getting ready that they'll try that for the first couple snowstorms, and then they want to roll that out to the public. So you'll be able to see, man, Kristen Streets and River West are getting plowed every hour, but mine and Bayview are only getting plowed every 3 hours. Why is that? And you'll actually have real data in front of you to look at it.
And from my mayoral days, three biggest complaints: snow plowing, leaf pickup, my neighbor's leaves, and the third one, dog complaints. Those are the big three.
And we'll probably have more on the dogs in an upcoming meeting,
because
there was a good 5 or 10 minute debate about that at the last Common Council meeting about what a dog fancier is in the city of Milwaukee.
Wow.
And I'll explain all that in a future episode.
That usually means somebody wants more dogs, right? Or less dogs.
In this case, it's less dogs, or at least regulations around dogs.
Yeah, yeah, that's always a hot button.
Oh, I was going to ask, what is the leaf pickup situation in Milwaukee this year? So, I feel like they've changed it in the past.
So it started October 1st. I've seen them come around my neighborhood several times, and my maple tree has been contributing to piles all around town. Okay. But there is a website you can actually see if your neighborhood, when they're coming next, or if they've recently come to your neighborhood. That's on the Department of Works website. Search for leaf pickup. And then it ends kind of on a flexible date because of warmer temperatures. I mean, leaves are on the trees longer. They try and extend it out into winter and into December. The challenge could be the longer they extend it, the worse the first snow plowing effort might be.
I love how you worked a personal question into the show content.
He's a smart guy.
I know. That's why he's here.
From having to look it up.
More Jeremy next Thursday. More of us tomorrow with Bill and Joe. Always a great show. Don't miss it. You miss any or all of the show, WTMJ.com podcast page. See you next week, Jeremy. News is next, 620 WTMJ.